Welcome back to Dialogue from Illinois Soul. I'm Reginald Hardwick, Illinois Public Media News and Public Affairs Director. In a moment, you'll hear from Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul. But first, here's just a little bit of what happened in the second week of President Donald Trump's second term.
President Trump is inviting nearly all federal employees to quit by September 30th.
Late this afternoon, a federal judge ordered a temporary halt on a sweeping White House plan to pause funding for all federal grants and loans.
It is the responsibility of this president and this administration to be good stewards of taxpayer dollars.
What Donald Trump tried to do in the last 24 hours is illegal.
If it feels like you are being asked to subscribe to a nation fueled by hate over hope and retribution over problem solving, you are not imagining things.
Those were the voices of Mary Louise Kelly of NPR, Amna Nawaz of PBS, White House spokesperson Caroline Leavitt, Governor J.B. Pritzker, and Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton. And those voices were just from Tuesday. Also, there is more fallout from one of Trump's executive orders to end birthright citizenship, a constitutional right for everyone born in the United States. The issue of citizenship goes back to 1857, when the Supreme Court ruled against Dred Scott, an enslaved black man who sued to gain his freedom. In their decision, the court said black people were not entitled to citizenship, and they were inferior to white people. However, after the Civil War, Congress ratified the 14th Amendment, guaranteeing citizenship for all, including black people. Protecting birthright citizenship is of keen interest to Attorney General Kwame Raoul. Not only is he suing the Trump administration on behalf of Illinois to overturn the executive order, but as the son of Haitian immigrants, this issue is personal to him. Raoul talked earlier this week with Brian Mackey of The 21st Show.
You mentioned earlier being a birthright baby. In fact, your parents immigrated to the U.S. from Haiti. As you well know, Haitian immigrants were a focus of Trump's rhetoric during the campaign, like the false statement about, you know, they're eating the dogs, they're eating the cats, and so on, during his debate with then-Vice President Harris. Talk about that. Talk about how, I mean, did your family feel welcomed in a way that, did your parents ever talk about that in a way that maybe is different from now? Or were they, did they face discrimination of that sort?
Certainly, they faced discrimination simply because they were black in the 50s, right? You know, my father came here as a physician, so I assume he had a special visa for professionals because of the need for doctors at the time. He initially came to New York. Both of my parents, they actually met in New York, not in Haiti. My mother initially came as a student. She was sick and had to go back and came back. She worked in furniture, the furniture textile industry. So she was a sweatshop worker for a while. She was not a citizen at the time of my birth.
Illinois, like many states, is grappling with a host of legal challenges under the new Trump administration. What is top of mind for you as you assess the potential battles ahead?
I think it's important, even for people who don't have a sensitivity to some of the subject matter areas that some of the executive orders impact. You know, so an individual may not have a sensitivity to birthright citizenship. They might have a sensitivity to the DOJ memo suggesting to investigate, prosecute local officials. But most people care about the United States Constitution.
So you mentioned the 14th Amendment. That is birthright citizenship right there, Section 1. Your office, along with attorneys general in other states, obtained a temporary restraining order against a presidential executive order on this subject. Can you just talk about the constitutional arguments at play and how Illinois is proceeding in this case?
Yeah, I mean, it's really fundamental. Section 1 of the 14th Amendment says that someone born in the United States or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof is a citizen of the United States and a resident of the state wherein they live. I think a first or second grader can understand Section 1 of the 14th Amendment. It's a provision that grows out of a response to the Dred Scott decision post-Civil War, where the Dred Scott decision was trying to deny citizenship to formerly enslaved people. So symbolically, it has meaning beyond the challenges that we're facing with immigration.
There was a case that sort of established what this meant in the way we understand it today. Do you think there's a chance that that could be overturned?
I don't believe so. I mean, this is not a Dobbs versus Roe v. Wade sort of complexity, although I disagree with the Dobbs decision. There, it wasn't just a simple question, just plain, unambiguous language and a constitutional amendment. I'm confident in all nine justices' capacity to read plain language, and they're remaining true to their historic philosophy that where there's plain and unambiguous language, you don't try to go figure things out from there. You don't even go to legislative history or anything like that. You just read the plain language and you apply it. And that's been their very conservative ideology as to how to approach the Constitution. I don't see any reason why it should change now.
You recently issued updated guidance reaffirming that Illinois law enforcement cannot be used to enforce federal immigration laws. What challenges are you anticipating in maintaining that boundary?
You've probably heard or read the Department of Justice memo that suggests to investigate or prosecute any state or local officials that don't collaborate with civil immigration enforcement efforts. You know, before I go into this, I want to preface with saying that I, as a head of the Attorney General's office, while our office is multifaceted, we have a criminal prosecution side to our office. And on that side of the office, we frequently on a daily, week-to-week basis, we collaborate with the FBI, the DEA, the ATF, Secret Service, and Homeland Security investigations on a wide range of criminal investigation. Some cases that we prosecute where they think it's better prosecuted in state court, and some cases that may be prosecuted by the U.S. Attorney in federal court. These cases range from child pornography cases to human trafficking, drug trafficking, gun trafficking, fraud, and so on. Targets of investigations are citizens and non-citizens alike. So it's important not to confuse the Trust Act with ongoing and or new criminal investigations. I say that because the prioritization that has been articulated by the president to start with those who have committed criminal acts. There's nothing in the Trust Act that prevents local or state law enforcement agency from collaborating in criminal investigations. So we have to be careful as to how we talk about this, because it's a little bit of a trick bag when you say, hey, well, if you're not cooperating with civil immigration enforcement, you're threatening the public safety.
That was Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul, the son of Haitian immigrants. He and attorney generals from 21 other states are suing to stop President Trump's efforts to end birthright citizenship in the U.S. We'll keep you updated on what happens next. Illinois is one of 17 states that has severely restricted or eliminated parole for those who are incarcerated. The state abolished its parole system in 1978. Prior to that, a board could let people out before completing their sentence. As IPM's Emily Hayes reports, things could change during this year's state legislative session.
Joseph Dole was one of about a dozen students facing a group of lawmakers in March of 2018. I don't have any public speaking experience, so I was a little bit nervous.
The students were in teams, each arguing for the most effective way to bring parole back to Illinois. They had read many law journal articles, legal cases, and studies.
The most shocking part for us was that we thought they would be more informed than we were, and it was actually the opposite.
But this wasn't an ordinary high school or college debate class, and these were not typical students. All are serving life sentences in prison.
The people who showed up, almost every one of them said, you know, it wasn't so much the arguments we were making, like those are all valid arguments, but the fact that you guys are up there and so knowledgeable and composed and, you know, it just like destroys the stereotype. And that is more powerful than the actual arguments that you could ever make.
Dole was convicted of murder in 2000 based on a state law that holds people accountable for the actions of others. He has maintained his innocence. Raul Dorado was convicted of murder in the same year under the same law.
What we have now, we have a determinate sentencing scheme where you give people a fixed sentence. There's no reviewing their progress throughout the sentence.
The state does have a prisoner review board, but they only get involved after the sentence is complete. It's why Dorado and the class drafted legislation that would allow those in prison a chance to turn their work, education, and disciplinary history while incarcerated into freedom. It's known as the Earned Reentry Bill. He argues it's safer to give those in prison a reason to improve themselves.
After 20 years, you're eligible to present your best self before the Illinois Prisoner Review Board and plead your case for relief. And it's not a get-out-of-jail-free card. You have to meet certain criteria.
At first, the class tried working with one lawmaker to get the legislation passed, but Dole says she made changes to it that they didn't like. They then gave it to Urbana Representative Carol Ammons.
I've been involved in criminal justice reform for almost 20 years.
Before joining the General Assembly in 2015, Ammons ran the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center and its Books to Prisoners program. She says the state would save money by keeping fewer people in prison.
Statistically and numerically, crime is down. And so do we need the level of facilities that we have in the state? Perhaps we don't. If we had an parole system, we probably would not, which saves the taxpayers significant money.
Ammons has been working on the Earned Reentry Bill for 3 years. She says some of the delay is making sure the change will roll out smoothly.
And the other part of that is the Prisoner Review Board, which is, I think, has experienced some instability for a number of years. Certainly in the last 3 years, we've been trying to pass this bill. And that instability makes it difficult for us to implement the bill.
The bill also has critics. Jennifer Bishop Jenkins is a prominent victim's family advocate who doesn't think all parole cases should be left up to the review board.
There are psychopathic serial killers. There are people who are not safe. And unfortunately, sadly, my sister's killer is one of them.
Her sister was 25 and pregnant when she and her husband were killed in their home by a teenager. Despite the crime, Bishop Jenkins is against capital punishment. She helped end the death penalty in Illinois in 2011 in favor of a life without parole.
To put any body of human beings that are not, you know, psychiatrists and, experts in sociopathic personality disorders and psychopathic diagnoses and things like that. Nobody else should be making that decision.
In the years following the class debate, Raul Dorado and Joseph Dole founded a nonprofit called Parole Illinois. And they and the others who wrote the bill oppose excluding any group of incarcerated people.
Remember, it's not a jail, get out of jail free card.
Dole says the Illinois Department of Corrections screens everyone to identify psychopathy, and those records would be available to the Prisoner Review Board.
You still have to go up before a conservative board, but at least it would act as a safety valve for all the overly punitive laws we've passed over the last 4 or 5 decades and give a guys a chance to, you know, put forth their case that they've served enough time or they can be safely released or safely allowed to reunite with their families.
Carol Ammons says the Prisoner Review Board did receive more money from the state last year, which she thinks will help increase support for the Earned Reentry Bill.
The PRB has to be adequately staffed, as well as the members of the PRB need to be stabilized so that they can look at these issues. They would have to have a certain amount of hearings, and those need to be done on a regular basis.
If the bill passes, about 4,000 people would be eligible because they've already served 20 years of their sentence. That's according to Department of Corrections data from last September. I'm Emily Hayes.
Richard Hunt was a prolific Black sculptor from Chicago's South Side who died in December of 2023. He used his art to express grief, racial trauma, and liberation. His abstract, metal creations are on display at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum in Springfield. Mawa Iqbal spent a day at the exhibit with Hunt's biographer and close friend, John Ott. The music you hear is composed by Randy Irwin. It's inspired by what Hunt would listen to while sculpting.
At the opening of the exhibition is a somber, reflective moment to see one of Hunt's first welded sculptures. Hero's Head is a depiction in sculptural form of the lynched body of Emmett Till that Richard saw in the funeral in 1955 that he attended with his family. This was attended by thousands and thousands of people on the South Side of Chicago. Emmett Till became a spark of the civil rights movement and very important also within the context of Richard's finding himself, his own aim and direction is his artistic practice. The sculpture is a little smaller than life size. It was of a 14-year-old Emmett, but the sculpture recounts in somewhat abstracted form the horrible tragedy that this lynching had on Emmett Till's head. A crushed face, a missing eyeball, a cracked skull. One of the largest sculptures in the exhibition is From the Sea, which was commissioned by McDonald's Corporation from Hunt in 1983. That was the year that Ronald Reagan finally passed a federal holiday for Martin Luther King Jr. This particular sculpture of nearly 6 foot tall and just as wide represents crashing waves of the Red Sea. And you can see through the overarching waves that look quite menacing as they're crashing down the path and the opening of the Red Sea created by Moses to help the Israelites escape. This particular moment was captured in a speech by Martin Luther King Jr. in his 1956 sermon, which was titled The Death of Evil Upon the Seashore. And in that particular speech, King said, and I quote here, "There is a Red Sea in history that ultimately comes to carry the forces of goodness to victory. And that same Red Sea closes in to bring doom and destruction to the forces of evil." As we leave the exhibition, one of the more poignant pieces is the maquette for Hero Ascending, recalling back to Hunt's origin story, really the origin of his artistic life and practice, having seen Emmett, and then now at the end of his life, having been commissioned to build a sculptural monument to Emmett himself. And you can see the forms of wings, you can see the uplift throughout the sculpture, where he ultimately aimed his life's work was this idea of freedom and growth. And this was his reaction after processing the trauma of Emmett Till, that he would spend the rest of his life dedicating his sculptural practice to the highest achievements of Black Americans, as well as people all across the world, which is the desire for freedom.
You are listening to John Ott, a biographer and longtime friend of the Chicago sculptor Richard Hunt. The exhibit at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum in Springfield runs through April. And that's this week's Dialogue Show. You can listen to all of our podcasts on YouTube. You'll find us on the Illinois Public Media channel. Dialogue's host and producer is Kennedy Vincent. Our other producers are Patricia Bradford, Ariel Ravani, and Zany Qureshi. Dialogue and Illinois Soul are part of Illinois Public Media, a service of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. I'm Reginald Hardwick. Thank you for listening, and we'll dialogue with you again next week.